Well, once again, welcome everyone. Really such a delight to see all of you here in person and also there on Zoom. Tonight, what I'd like to do is to begin with a poem. And it's a poem by this Polish poet, Czesław Miłosz. And the title of it is To Fall in Love. And he begins in French. Tomber amoureux. To fall in love. Does it occur suddenly or gradually? If gradually, when is the moment already? And then he continues, I would fall in love with a monkey made of rags. With a plywood squirrel, with a botanical atlas, with an oriole, with a ferret, with a marten in a picture, with the forest one sees to the right when riding in a cart to Yazone, with a poem by a little-known poet. With human beings whose names still move me. And always, always the object of love was enveloped in fantasy, erotic fantasy. And of the fairy tales about it, one invents. Yes, I was often in love with something or someone, yet falling in love is not the same as being able to love. That is something different. Maybe you've noticed this. Have you noticed how your heart, it falls in love with all kinds of things, all kinds of people? And as he says, the fairy tales about it one invents. It comes with falling in love, those stories, those fairy tales. And then he makes, to me, that interesting distinction. Yet falling in love is not the same as being able to love. That's something different. And I find this poem so striking because the entire poem, he's just talking about falling in love, these things he's falling in love with, kind of a, to me, an odd and peculiar list. Yet for me, the power of the poem is that it's truly about being able to love. And yet nothing is said about it in the poem other than it's different than falling in love, this being able to love. So what's up with that in terms of this poem? For me, the way I take it in is the poet doesn't say anything about being able to love because that can't be contained in a poem. It's like, oh yeah, of course it can't be contained in a poem because it's something I need to learn really through my heart. I can't learn it through a poem. I need to practice being able to love. And maybe this is what this path is really about. It's about learning to be able to love, not just falling in love. But to really be able to love. So how do we learn how to be able to love? What's that process of learning? And one way we find on this path and in this practice that I'm sure many of you come across is this this nurturing, this cultivating this heart quality of loving kindness. It's really so central to this path. And the Pali word, Pali being one of the early scriptural languages of Buddhism, the Pali word for loving kindness is metta. So tonight, what I'd like to share with you are actually a number of different doorways to step through to engage on this journey of exploring and nurturing loving kindness. One of these doorways into, I think, into being able to love, to be able to truly love, which I'll get into a little bit more. And the way to begin is I want to briefly define and describe this heart quality of loving kindness in metta. So again, metta, it comes from this word mitta, which means friend. So often metta is translated as friendliness. Sometimes loving kindness, sometimes friendliness. Another translation is goodwill or a sense of benevolence, or sometimes even like a general sense of caring. So hopefully, sometimes when I get a number of words that are translating, you can start to get a feeling sense of this realm. And then the Buddha also uses a simile. This is so wonderful. You find this, it's said that with every teaching of the Buddha's, there's a simile to help describe it. And the simile he uses is that metta is the kind of love a mother has for their child. So that quality. And what's also helpful is to know about the quality of heart and mind we can mistake for loving kindness. So in the commentaries, this is called the near neighbor of loving kindness. The thing of like, oh, I think this is loving kindness, but actually it isn't. It's just close to it, but different. And that would be a kind of selfish, affectionate craving that sometimes gets called love. And I want to point out that that's a very different kind of love, not the one I'm talking about tonight. The poet Adelie Mohan, I find, describes this love, the selfish love, the near neighbor, really quite poignantly, and how we can get confused by it. She says, "Before, the only thing I was interested in was love, how it grips you, how it terrifies you, how it annihilates and resuscitates you. I didn't know then that it wasn't even love that I was interested in, but my own suffering. I thought suffering kept things interesting. How funny that I called it love, and the whole time it was pain." Have you ever experienced such love, which isn't love at all? It seems like you can relate to this, right? And I love this because it feels like that, like, oh, this is what I thought love was. But then I realized, oh, this is just my own pain. And this is just my own pain and probably the pain of others. It makes things interesting. Right, but again, being able to love is something different than that. And loving kindness is something different than that. And there's also another dimension embedded in this love of metta, of loving kindness, in that it's meant to be nurtured towards all beings. So it is what's called an unconditional love, or I'm going to use that word to use that in this way, rather than conditional love. So what does this mean, unconditional love compared to conditional love in this context that I'm sharing with you? And the kind of the image that works for me is it's like if I were to be in a forest of trees and plants of different species, and they had different shapes and sizes, and some were crooked, Some were straight, some were bent over, some were broken. Some of those plants may be a little more parasitic, some are symbiotic. And really, when I'm practicing loving kindness, I just have this goodwill towards all of them, just because they are, because of their beingness. I love them for that, and my heart opens to that. That's the unconditional aspect of loving kindness. So hopefully you're hearing metta, loving kindness. It's not based on if I like or don't like a particular being. It's not based on if I like or don't like their particular actions or their personality. Rather, it's this, I'm learning something deeper to touch into their fundamental state of being and to allow that to evoke in my heart a sense of care, of kindness, of goodwill, of friendliness. So hopefully you're hearing the practice of this. I'm learning to tap into that deeper, more fundamental sense of living beings. And then thus a deeper, more fundamental sense of care for them. And as I always say, the phrase I use is, please don't universalize this practice of kindness, which means don't assume that this is going to be the answer to every situation. Right? Sometimes there's a place for clear boundaries and skillful outrage, which this is another talk, actually sometimes are skillfully interwoven with kindness. So not to oversimplify. So this unconditional loving kindness. Also, I want to point out, this is the way I feel, that there is a place for conditional love, for conditional goodwill, where I have a sense of friendliness, a sense of loving kindness that's based on the particularities of that particular living being. I have this personal connection with them. And I want to point out that love too can be so beautiful and touching and even onward leading. I'm not here to diminish that, but just to show the flavor of loving kindness that we're cultivating. And I think there's a place to cultivate a skillful quality of conditional love. So they're just different flavors. And they have their own benefits and they reveal different things and open the heart and different ways, and probably could even be intertwined. So this is metta loving kindness, right? These definitions: friendliness, goodwill, sense of caring. It has an unconditional quality. So how do I step into this? How do I allow my heart to get a feeling sense of this? And also how liberating and freeing it can be to have more access to kindness in my heart. And one way that I love as a practice is just small acts of kindness during the day. I find they make such a big difference. They make a big difference for my heart. They make a big difference for the relationships I'm in and the communities I'm in. Like simply setting down your phone and fully listening to someone. What a beautiful act of kindness. To offer a smile or a kind hello to somebody. Or to slow down to offer some words of appreciation or expressing gratitude. Picking up a piece of trash. Offering someone food or a meal. And so many more. I'm just sharing that with you to prime. I find it so helpful to wake up and to remember, oh, can I just discover small acts of kindness I can engage in? It delights my heart. And also I want to point out, it can be helpful, small acts of kindness, even when you don't feel kindness. Like, it's okay to want to be kind when you don't feel it. Or even, as Teacher Philip Moffat says, To want to be kind. I love that. It normalizes. Maybe there are times where you're feeling pretty far away from kindness, and the closest you can get to it is to want to experience kindness. And what I want to point out is that intention itself is an act of love in and of itself, right? There's the intention of, I want to be kind. I'm not feeling that, but I want to be kind. And there it is. There it's emerging, a seed. Right? The heart might feel dry, or maybe the heart's even angry, but the very act itself of wanting to be kind is the essence, I think, of love, of kindness. So another doorway into kindness is how it's interwoven into mindfulness itself, like the mindfulness practice that we're just engaged in silence. And how I can learn to, at least I find, to lean into that a bit in my practice of mindfulness, both in formal meditation and during daily life. And I find this is important because sometimes what's emphasized in learning mindfulness can be attentional skills, like allowing the attention to linger with the feeling of the breathing, or to linger with the feeling of a sensation or an emotion. And I want to say that is important. That is a part of meditation. Yet what I found is that so much of what it is to cultivate the sense of presence, of mindfulness, is also about softening my heart in particular ways. Because sometimes what's making it difficult for me to be present is my heart. It's holding, it's bracing against experience or whatever is going on. And when there's just a softening, oh, here I am, right here. Like as a practitioner shared with me, she said, you know, I don't need to remember to be present. I don't need to do that. I just need to remember to be kind. And then what happens when she remembers to be kind, then there's presence. To allow for that way as a gateway in. And it feels effective for me for navigating my life. Right? For me, when I find myself grappling with irritation or worry or stress that I have too much on my plate, or my mind's ruminating about some interaction, I've discovered kind of the immense value in not only acknowledging and being aware of those feelings, but also in responding to them with kindness. And with this response of kindness, it's often very simple for me. There's a recognition, a worry, and then I'm just consciously relaxing my body and inviting a sense of ease. And that softens the edges of those emotions. It's as if I'm offering kindness, or maybe more precisely, compassion, a form of kindness directly to the irritation or fear or worry. It's like there's a being I can share kindness and compassion to, that emotion. And then there's that softening of the edges. So hopefully you're hearing that with this particular doorway, I'm expanding what and who I am offering kindness to. Not only to others or to myself, but also I can offer kindness or compassion to emotions. And to go even further than this, I find it really fascinating to take on that, you could say, that perception or way of playing with being, with experience, to even bring a softening or a friendliness to the way I pick up a cup of tea, or the way I wash the dishes, or the way I open or close a door. What's it like to bring that to those activities with attentiveness filled with care and presence? You know, when I was doing the Zen monk thing, there was such a an emphasis on this, on how you lifted a cup of tea, how you opened a door, how you closed a door, how you sat down, and how you stood up. And when I reflected back on that, it was like this training in bringing care, an attention and attentiveness that was filled with care and kindness. It made a difference in what it felt like just to live my life in these daily activities. And one other gateway. And for me, another gateway is silence. Kind of with the support of meditation, when I feel like I'm in contact with silence, and this is hard to describe, kind of like a kind of silence that feels present even in the midst of sounds. You ever had that experience? Like even right now, there's the sound of the heater, if you're here in person. But sometimes if you slow down, if you pause, it's like, oh, I can hear the silence underneath that. Maybe you can hear that silence a little bit when I'm speaking right now. Can you hear that silence that feels deeper than sound? And when I linger with such silence, it can start to feel like it's holding me. It's embracing me, like it's palpably present all around me and my body. And maybe right now you can feel that. Oh, yeah, I can feel the silence around me. Oh, maybe it's embracing me. And maybe there's even a flavor of kindness there. And I find this so helpful during my life at times because it can feel like I can rest into that palpable presence of silence that's supporting me in some way. So I share all this with you because I feel like an exploration of kindness, it has the potential of transforming how we show up in the world. And for me, it has the potential of teaching me how to truly be able to love rather than merely falling in love, or that near neighbor of love that I called love that was really about my own pain and the pain of others that I was just lost in. So there's one example of this, just a small example of this that I find poignant. And it's about this Zen master, Chan, Buddhist master, Shuyun, who at one time was the head of all five Chan Buddhist lineages in China. And the reason why he was the head of all these lineages is because he was so revered and respected because of the depth of his practice. And unfortunately, I don't know, unfortunately, but yeah, unfortunately, this position, once he got into it, came at a cost to him because it was during the Cultural Revolution. And during the Cultural Revolution, especially people who were in leadership roles in kind of Buddhist contexts, it was very dangerous. And so what had happened to him is, a bunch of soldiers from the Red Army came and severely beat him. And he was in horrible shape. And he was actually over 100 years old before when this happened. He lived to 120, so it was pretty amazing. And his students recognized that he was struggling just to simply stay alive. And they were feeling that he was struggling just to stay alive on their behalf so that he could continue to support them in their practice. So, they said to him, please, no, don't feel obligated to struggle to stay alive just for us. And he responded, and remember, he's coming from this very traditional Buddhist perspective when he responds, but hopefully you can hear the context, the sense of kindness here. He said, oh, actually, I'm struggling to stay alive so that those soldiers won't have to endure the karmic consequences of having killed me. So if I survive, the way their life will unfold will be so much better. That's a depth of kindness. Do you hear the unconditional quality of love there and the deep caring? This unconditional kindness mixed with compassion. It wasn't about their personalities. It definitely wasn't about the good deeds they were doing, but rather a deep caring simply because they're living beings. I know that's a high bar, but I find it inspiring nonetheless. So, of course, it's not condoning unskillful behavior. It's about caring and kindness. So, as the poet Czesław Miłosz says that I shared with you at the beginning, yes, I was often in love with something or someone. Yet falling in love is not the same as being able to love. And that is something different. So may all of us learn how to be able to love for the benefit of all beings. Thank you. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.